Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
We have a very big show for you today as we continue our coverage of the online poker shutdown, which took place 11 days ago on that Black Friday, April 15th. We will talk today with Steve Day from PokerStars, who has good news for those of you who still have money in your PokerStars accounts in the USA, who are wondering, when can I get it off? You are going to hear some very good news from Steve later on this hour. Also coming up, Oscar Garcia, who is a guy who covers the world of gaming and gambling, and has been writing a lot about the online poker story for the Associated Press. And John Pappas, who's the director of the Poker Players Alliance on the efforts there in Washington to get the DOJ to back off a little bit, or better yet, get Congress to move forward on legislation. And if not on a federal level, what can we expect from the states? So all of that coming up in this hour. I am Paul Harrah, sitting at the feature table at Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, where the Bad Beat jackpot has still not been hit. I really thought it would be hit during the circuit event here a couple weeks ago, but it is up to $223,000, and that's brought a lot of people in to play in the cash games and tournaments here, and we hope to see you here sometime soon. My buddy Dennis Phillips is out in Las Vegas. How are you today, Dennis?
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Good. Congratulations on making day two of the Venetian main event, which I know you're actually going to have to run to before we even finish up the show today.
Well, these guys are just great here. I'm actually in one of the little side rooms of their poker room, and they've given me the ability to sit back here in a little corner to do this. But if you guys have never been to the Venetian, you got to come out here. It's absolutely awesome, and they treat you like a king. I did make day two here. I am very short-stacked. We started with 293 people. There's, I think, 62 left, and I'm probably one of the bottom 10, but I still got chips.
You're still in there, and as we've said before, you're pretty good at grinding the short stack in tournaments and playing disciplined poker, and hopefully you'll be able to hit a big hand and double up early on and make it through dinner and into day three. I assume this is a 3 or 4 day event?
Correct. We'll play down to a final table today and then come back tomorrow to finish it up. Hopefully I'll be coming back tomorrow. Like I said, I'm down to a 6M. With the way it's set up, it's a 2K, 1K for the blinds, but it's a $300 ante, and they're still playing a full 10 at a table. So by that, you're looking at $6,000 every round that we play, and that eats into a stack pretty quick.
Yeah.
That's why I like the M factor much better than the big blinds, because the big blinds, I've got 15 or 16 of those, and it doesn't look quite as bad. On this one, though, I've only got a 6M factor, and that's what's more important to me.
Yeah, you're going to have to find something fairly early on and make a move, because even one time around the table, you're going to be right at that critical point, aren't you?
Exactly.
All right, before we talk about any of the online stuff, I know you've been playing a lot in the card rooms in Vegas, and I've been playing a lot here in the card rooms in St. Louis. Let's talk a little bit about, since Black Friday, the effect it's had on live poker in our two cities.
Well, in the short term, it actually has increased it. There's been some really good cash games going on in Vegas. I played here at the Venetian a couple of different times. There's a lot of players that are coming here. And it's not going to stay this way long, because these are good online players, but they're not used to the cash game and the differences between a cash and an online. Some of them right now are nice to have at your table. However, that's probably not going to last very much longer. They have a steep learning curve, and they're going to become very good at the cash games very quickly, I'm afraid. So right now there's some really nice cash games going on in Vegas. A new room just opened up at Tropicana, a brand-new poker room down there. The Venetian has got some great games going here. It's a good time to be in Vegas for cash games.
Yeah, I hear some of the higher-end pros have been playing in that Bobby Belland game over at the Aria as well.
Yep, yep, absolutely have been. There's been a number of those over there. It's been a pro sighting almost every night. But some of those games are rather tough.
Yeah, I would think that they are. Here in St. Louis, I've also seen a lot of younger online pros, guys who would occasionally play in some of the bigger games here, turning themselves more into regulars. Because, you know, as one of them said to me, I have 40 or 50 hours a week that I'm not doing anything with anymore. He had been spending a lot of time grinding online. He says one of the biggest problems he finds is he was a shorthanded expert. He would play six-handed or even four-handed or heads up online. And, of course, in live cash games, you're not going to find that many, many places, and certainly not here in St. Louis. So he's sitting down in full ring games, and that's really testing his patience. But I talked to a couple of other local online pros who are thinking to themselves, you know what, maybe we hit it big for a few years, as we have, and now we just have to open up some other business or go into something else. They are not thinking about moving elsewhere.
Well, if that's the way they want to do it, tell you what, I just got something handed to me here too, Paul. Did you see this new news about Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet?
No.
And their lawsuit?
No.
Okay, let's bring this up real quick because I think these are questions you might want to ask Oscar and also John Pappas.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Before you read it to me, let's bring in Oscar Garcia from the Associated Press, who I think is sitting on hold and listening to us as we talk. Oscar, are you
Perfect.
There?
I am right here. How are you doing? Good to talk
Good.
To both of you.
Good to talk to
hey,
you.
Oscar.
Thanks. I know you've interviewed Dennis a couple of times over the years, and now we're happy to have you joining the conversation. So feel free to react to whatever it is Dennis has in front of him there.
Sure, I appreciate it. Although, if it's news to me, I might have to get on it after we're done.
Well, I don't know. And again, this was just handed to me. I haven't even verified it. But okay, PokerStars and Full Tilt. Their first concern was returning the money to the players, and they tried to work with the DOJ for that. And we've got some interesting news for that later in the hour. However, Absolute Poker and their smaller site, Ultimate Bet, did not. Well, now it's just come out, according to this, that they are filing suit against the U.S. government. And they're doing it through the finance minister of the island of Antigua. That the lawsuit is going to go to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and they're going to be filing that suit against the U.S. government. Now, this, if I'm not mistaken, a similar one like that was filed a few years back, and they won. I think they won like 20 or 25 million from the U.S. government on a suit similar to this. So rather than following the path that the PokerStars and Full Tilt did and try and get the money back as quick as they can to the players, they're going to fight this thing in court on the WTO.
Oscar, do you know anything about this?
Well, I had heard rumors about this before, but I hadn't verified it. And in my world, we don't usually do stories when people say they're thinking about filing a lawsuit. We wait until they actually do it, because a lot of people think about suing folks all the time. But this
well,
is an argument that I had heard rumored about, and it seems like it would sort of be something that would run parallel with the investigation that's going on in New York. I don't know what this would have to do with the allegations of bank fraud and money laundering that Absolute faces.
And again, I don't know either, but they even have a direct quote here from the Minister of Finance from Antigua that they are filing the suit, period. So I don't know any more than that. It was news to me. And again, I agree with you. This is a little bit different than the money laundering issues and such that they're being accused of.
Well, Oscar, this may be related to one of the reasons why, while Tilt and Stars made a deal with the DOJ to get their domain names back, their .com names back, and allow their players to get their money back off their sites, the Sirius Network sites, both Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet, have not made such a deal, right?
Right. What they told us last week was that they're reviewing the documents with their lawyers before they take the next step. They did say that returning player funds is the top priority. And, just being around these companies for a few years, because of the space that they're operating in, obviously customer relations is the name of the game. I mean, if they don't have the trust of their customers, then they don't really have anything when it comes to the world of online poker. I mean, you guys know that even better than I do.
Yep.
So, but what they said last week was that they're review that they hired a law firm and that they wanted to go over the indictment and all the related court papers to see what the proper next steps were before taking some action. I think the other thing to note here is that while Stars and Tilt did make those deals with the DOJ and called them a nice next step, Full Tilt came out right away and said, well, we still don't really have a channel to process these payments. And that's something that would need to be set up, presumably, before any players actually get some money back in their hands.
Yeah. If my guess is right about what Steve Day is going to tell us later, PokerStars may be taking the lead on that, and we'll find out in a little while later on in this show. One of the other things I want to ask you about, several things I want to ask you about here, Oscar, aspects of this story that you've been covering, were comments that you got out of Steve Wynn last week. For our listeners who haven't been paying attention, Steve Wynn, the owner of the Wynn and the Encore, the guy who started the Bellagio and the Mirage and one of the real keys to building Vegas into what it is today, had long been against the notion of online poker, but had a meeting with Esai Scheinberg, who is the head of PokerStars, one of the 11 who's now been indicted by the DOJ. But they had a meeting several weeks ago and came to a 50-50 partnership to form an online site called PokerStarsWin.com. Wynn has since canceled that deal ever since Black Friday. When you talked to him last week, tell us what he had to say about this.
I actually didn't talk to him myself, but he did speak with investors during a conference call, and since I covered the company's earnings, I was listening to him as he was talking with investors and everybody else. What he said was that he came to that deal sort of reluctantly, and by that I mean he had come to the realization that online poker is something that his company needs to pay attention to in the future, and so he wanted to be a part of it in what he thought was the best way possible. He characterized the deal as contingent on a lot of things, on there being federal regulations in place, on Stars then getting a license in Nevada or whatever proper jurisdictions that there would be. And then at that point that they would run a site that would be PokerStars Win or Win PokerStars and .com, and that they would split the profits from that 50-50. Now, this is a little bit different than what they were saying when they announced the partnership a little while ago. Back then, they were saying that together they were going to push for legalization on the federal level. While this was going on, PokerStars, as you guys know, was pushing a state bill in Nevada, and there were some rumblings of legislation going on in other states. So Wynn certainly backed off of PokerStars, but he also said that they've heard from other companies in the online gambling space, and that they want to see how things are going to shake out with legislation before they make any decisions.
Okay, go ahead, Dennis.
No, go ahead. That's all right.
I was just going to say, talk a little bit about the legislation inside Nevada, because we'll talk with John Pappas from the PPA about how things look at the federal level, but Nevada is one of those states that has talked about intrastate online poker legislation. Where does that stand now?
It did. Well, at this point, the bill's really been stripped down to sort of a bare-bones level. And it's not the bill that it once was. I mean, right now the bill says that Nevada gaming regulators would need to draft regulations on how to regulate these online companies, but they wouldn't take effect until Congress sanctions it, until the Department of Justice sanctions it, and they changed their tune in that they're taking a back seat to what the feds might do.
And that reaction came after Black Friday?
That came, I don't know the exact timing of that reaction, but it's a far cry from where it was when it started. I mean, when the bill started, it was backed by PokerStars. They had a big lobby pushing for it here in Nevada. And the bill specifically said that sites like PokerStars and Full Tilt, that they couldn't be denied licenses just for the fact that they'd been offering online play to Americans 2006.
actually, I believe on Friday, that same time when the Black Friday, it was passed through the Finance Committee in Nevada, and it was in the stripped-down version. The two things that changed in it were, one, requiring some sort of a blessing, I guess you'd say, from the federal government, and number two, they took out the interstate compact or intercountry compact that was built into the bill originally that would have allowed them to, without having to pass more statutes or regulations, team up with other states and form kind of a compromise like they've done in the lottery. Both those things are stripped out. However, the idea that I had heard was that within the state of Nevada, they were trying to still be ahead of the curve and trying still to be proactive and to have all the regulations and everything else in place so that the moment that the federal government gave them the okay, they could just flip the switch. Was that your understanding?
Yeah, and I think that what a lot of folks might say is that there's evidence that regulators can do that already. I mean, at the same day that Wynn announced his arrangement with PokerStars, Caesars Entertainment, obviously the owner of the World Series of Poker, they were at a hearing before the Nevada Gaming Commission, getting a partnership blessed with 888, the online poker operator that operates overseas, and so regulators already were looking into that company. They were finding them suitable to do business with, and they had limited that activity to outside of the United States. But that partnership is obviously one that would probably grow a bit if it were ever legalized in the U.S. So some gambling regulators might say that they're already doing some of the things that this bill would kind of spell out.
You mentioned Caesars Entertainment, which is the parent company of Harrah's. Gary Loveman, who is the president and CEO of Caesars Entertainment, has an op-ed that appeared today on the Fortune magazine website, actually money.cnn.com, but it's under the Fortune header. And in his op-ed, he says, the question we face isn't will there be online poker. Millions of Americans have already answered that question through their regular play, and the latest indictments won't change that. In fact, less than 24 hours after the three poker sites were closed, other foreign operators began filling the void. Instead, the question is this: should we seize the moment to legalize online poker, permit a safe and legitimate industry in the U.S., and bring those jobs and revenues home? Unequivocally, the answer is yes. So it seems to me like a brick-and-mortar operation in Harrah's / Caesars really wants to move forward with this. They probably would be the beneficiary of any kind of legislation that passes, while PokerStars and Full Tilt and the Sirius Network companies are fighting against the federal government. Wynn would probably like to be a piece of that. MGM Mirage would probably like to be a piece of that. And there are others who would like to grab a piece of that pie as well. Is that your read on this, Oscar?
Yeah, and I think you've got it right. I think that the casino companies have made it very clear that they've moved from the position of, you know, no, we don't want any online gambling at all, to companies like Caesars. Caesars took the lead on this really a few years ago, saying we want to have a big opportunity here. And I think that it was clear from Loveman's piece that Caesars senses an opportunity, that they sense a chance here to make the argument that companies that can work in a strong regulatory framework ought to be the ones that get the business.
All right, before I let you go, I got to ask you about one other quick thing. What happened in the
sure.
Anthony Carlillo case last week? This is the guy who allegedly did that bold robbery of the Bellagio chips, something like $1.5 million, and then ended up getting caught because of his connections to showing up and playing in the Bellagio poker room. He was actually in court last week. What happened there?
The arrest report in that case is certainly an interesting read if you ever have a moment to read it. They actually had a plea in that case. He pleaded not guilty, and they set a trial date for early January. I believe January 10th is the date that they set. But that case looks like it's going to move forward unless there's some sort of plea agreement that's struck between now and then. But the latest on that is that they're moving forward, and I guess we're going to have to wait until early next year to see what happens.
Oscar Garcia covers the world of gaming and gambling for the Associated Press. You can follow him on Twitter at Oscar Garcia. That's Oscar with a K. At Oscar Garcia. And look for his byline on stories and news organizations that pick up the AP and run with it all over the world. We really appreciate your time today, Oscar. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
All right,
Oscar Garcia from the Associated Press. Absolutely. Joining us here at the final table, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk to John Pappas from the Poker Players Alliance. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, 117 weeks strong, and yes, still going, on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis. Sitting at the feature table at Harrah's, we're doing continuing coverage of the fallout and aftermath of the Black Friday online poker shutdown. As we mentioned in the first segment, it has accrued to the benefit of brick-and-mortar poker rooms like the one that I'm sitting in here with the bad beat at 223,000 and people playing in the cash games and tournaments. Harrah's here has 14 tournaments a week, including in the month of May, four more opportunities for you to get in there and win a chance, win a seat in the main event of the World Series of Poker. That's the same path that Dennis took. $200 became $4.5 million in his case. You want details on the schedule? Go to harrahs.com/stlpoker. That's harrahs.com/stlpoker. Find out about the tournaments. You know, if you're a person who has a full-time job, 9-to-5-er, they got 7 o'clock tournaments for you during the day. You work the night shift, they got afternoon tournaments for you to play. You want to come in and play on the weekends, they've got those as well. Check out harrahs.com/stlpoker. All right, now let's bring in John Pappas, who is the director of the Poker Players Alliance, online at theppa.org. Hi, John. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Tell us what is going on in terms of the PPA and any opportunity to turn the online poker shutdown into online poker legislation and move things forward.
Well, yeah, I think it was interesting that you were just talking about Harrah's and the poker rooms doing quite well after this shutdown. I think that's obviously a short-term benefit, perhaps, for the poker rooms. Interestingly enough, the CEO of Harrah's, now Caesars Entertainment, Gary Loveman, published an op-ed today in Forbes magazine that says, now more than ever, Congress needs to license and regulate Internet poker. So I think not just the PPA, but others are recognizing that this is an opportunity, that this is a tipping point in the debate, and that, I think we do have an opportunity to turn, for lack of a better term, lemons into lemonade. And, the playing community has been very vocal so far. I've been extremely pleased with the PPA membership activism. I think something like 70,000 letters have been sent in the past week to the Hill, to Obama, to Attorney General Holder. We're hearing from players on a daily basis about what more they can do, and we're trying to provide everyone with a call to action. We actually have a page up on our website where poker players can learn about the things they ought to do in response to Black Friday. And that's not by any means an exhaustive list. We're continuing to refine it and expand on it, and we'll continue to give the players all the tools they need to go and fight for the game that they love.
Well, I got a quick question for you, John. They just came out with this lawsuit that the Antigua or Absolute Poker is going to be filing through the WTO. Are you familiar with that at all? Is this something that you would be in favor of? Or
Well, certainly. I mean, this is not new. Antigua has already challenged this case at the WTO and won, and the U.S. what they said they were going to do is remove themselves from the GATS agreement, and all that was left was to be a settlement payment to Antigua and to other countries. And that settlement dollar that the U.S. would have to pay was never agreed on. So the case is, I guess, still open, and I think Antigua is, you know, seeing an opportunity to pile on, if you will. You know, we wish them the best of luck. It's not something the PPA's been asked to be involved in, nor are we directly involved in. You know, our focus is on galvanizing the player base to get Congress to act. But certainly, every little bit that kind of shows how ridiculous the DOJ action was and how counterintuitive it is to everything that we believe in as Americans and as people who would expect that this is an activity that should be regulated. You know, I just think it's a good step, and we're happy that they're doing it, and we hope they're successful.
John, last fall, after the election, we had that lame duck period where Harry Reid was trying to push through legislation that I think the PPA kind of felt lukewarm about, which would have included a blackout period and would have kept some of the current online sites from doing business in America. And it was a very, very convoluted and upside-down bill as far as Dennis and I were concerned. But should poker players who were playing online up until the 14th of this month just look at this as, okay, here's that blackout period, and it may have to last 18 months or a couple of years?
Well, I think some poker players may have said snap call all in if they could have seen into the future what today would look like when that bill was being proposed. You know, the PPA got a lot of heat from players, and understandably so, asking how we could support a bill with a blackout period in it. And one of the things that we continue to say, and which I think stands true, is that, you know, without some sort of legislative clarity, we are really the status quo is untenable, and you know, obviously no one expected the kind of the sweeping nature of the DOJ's indictments and shutdown, seizing the domain names, etc. And I think the pain is still there for the players who don't have access to their money. I guess this could be viewed as that blackout period now. Now the hope is that there will be some light at the end of the tunnel. I believe there is. Certainly, should that bill have passed back in December, there would have been a clear light at the end of the tunnel. Now, the onus is on us as the poker community to lobby even harder for licensing and regulation.
All right. I've got a pretty basic question here that I've never been able to understand. How can the U.S. government support, sanction, and endorse things like the lottery and yet oppose the online gaming? It seems so hypocritical, it's ridiculous.
Oh, not only that, they allow online horse betting.
Right, exactly.
Well, sure. I mean, you know.
And in their action just 2 weeks ago is very selective. They went after three of the largest online poker operators, yet we all know that there are places where people can make sports wagers online. We all know that there's places that people can play casino-style games online. They decided to selectively enforce this, and it's a real question mark as to their priorities, as well as, boy, do they believe the American people don't see them as hypocrites because government endorses various forms of gambling all over the country?
The follow-up question to this thing with the Eastern District of New York and filing this and the DOJ. Southern District, I'm sorry. I thought the Justice Department was there to defend and help out victims here in the U.S. What victims do they have? Who are they helping here?
I think that's a great question, and it's something that I've turned on its head to say that actually the only victims here were those players who've been denied their hobby, avocation, and in many cases their livelihood, and have had their money withheld from them. And those victims only came after the DOJ decided to shut down these sites. You know, I'm not going to stand here and defend any of the financial allegations, financial crime allegations in the indictment. But it does seem very hard to find out who the victims were of even those alleged crimes.
John, I've got to ask you a question here that's maybe a little bit tough. And we have been big endorsers of the Poker Players Alliance. We've been promoting the cause and the website and getting you members for over 2 years on this radio show. But as of late, in the last 11 days since Black Friday, the PPA has come in for quite a bit of criticism in some online forums and in some columns and in some comments by professional poker players that the PPA is really more beholden to online sites like Full Tilt and PokerStars, which did give you some funding money, that has had more of an impact on your operations and that your concerns are more for them than for poker players per se. I want to give you a chance to answer those because you know those criticisms have been out there. So what do you have to say to them?
Sure. Well, the heart and soul of the PPA is our million-plus members, the ones who live and vote in every congressional district across the country. And those are the people who come and talk to their lawmakers. You ask any lawmaker on Capitol Hill who they've heard more from, internet poker operators or internet poker executives or rank-and-file PPA members who live in their district, and the answer is going to be the same every time. They've never heard from an internet poker operator. They've only heard from American citizens who care about their right to play. The reality is, you know, the PPA did support legislation that we believed was good for the players, but maybe wouldn't have been the best thing for the online sites either. And this was the bill, the Reid bill, back in December that would have provided a two-year blackout period for the online sites. The PPA supported that because we felt that that was the best deal that we could get for the players at that time. The PPA is also a supporter of the Campbell-Frank bill, which is already introduced this year, which says in explicitly that anybody who accepted an illegal wager would not be able to apply for a license. That's language that I don't think PokerStars or Full Tilt would support, but the PPA does support it because we believe legislation in this area is more important than favoring any specific interest.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time, and I'm glad you got a chance to answer that question. There is a website called PokerPetition.com. That's really a PPA site where people can go and sign, and tens of thousands of poker players have signed. In fact, I think it's hundreds of thousands, isn't it?
PokerPetition.com, yes. They can also go to our website at thePPA.org/takeaction, and they can learn about all the different things they can do in this case to reach out to their elected officials, their local media, using the various social networks to kind of, you know, themselves be poker advocates. The PPA is going to obviously receive criticism from various quarters, but if the poker community doesn't believe that we are the vehicle in which to get something done, then we look forward to seeing what that vehicle is, and I'll be the first one to support it.
Well said. And Dennis, it's important to point out that people shouldn't just be talking about federal legislation, but also at the state level, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's movements now in a number of states. I mean, good grief, even Iowa and Hawaii are talking about different things. This is going to happen. We just have to make sure it happens in the best form, what's best for the poker players.
Yep.
Right. Interestingly enough, right here in the backyard of Congress and the Department of Justice, the District of Columbia is going to be the first U.S. jurisdiction to have licensed and regulated internet poker. They're going to be offering it through their online lottery this summer.
Now, wait a minute, John. Do you mean to say that possibly some representatives or senators or other elected officials might actually play poker?
I know of a few firsthand, and God, I'll tell you, if congressional staff were voting on this issue, it would have happened years ago. There's not a staffer I've run into that hasn't played poker online, particularly male staffers between the ages of, you know, 25 and 35 who just love it and can't believe that they're in a position to have to tell their, you know, when their boss is opposed to it.
Well, that's part of the hypocrisy of all this. As I joked last week, how many assistant U.S. attorneys do you think had to delete their PokerStars accounts after Black Friday? John, we really appreciate your time today. Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys, and I always appreciate you giving me a voice on your program.
John Pappas is the Executive Director of the Poker Players Alliance online at theppa.org. We'll be right back with Steve Day from PokerStars, who will have some exciting news for those of you who have money on stars and want to get it back. We'll have that for you next as the Final Table continues live from Las Vegas and Harrah's in St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on iTunes and thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with listeners all around the world, but a lot of them in America who want to know, can they get their money back from their online poker sites that were shut down on Black Friday? I'm Paul Harrah at Harrah's in St. Louis. My partner Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas, and you've got somebody from PokerStars to join us today, Dennis. Who's this?
Yeah, Steve Day is going to join us right now. He's one of the poker room managers for PokerStars. And I think you can give us a pretty good update as to what's been going on since Black Friday. Hello, Steve. Are you there?
I am, Dennis. How are you doing?
Excellent. I'm doing great. Hey, so on Friday, we had obviously the U.S. players not able to play on PokerStars right now. What's been happening with PokerStars then in the last since that time?
Well, the company is basically made one thing its number one priority, and that's being able to make funds available to U.S. players to cash out. It's been an intense process, and it's taken a lot of resources. It's basically been the sole focus of much of the company to make this possible. But as of about an hour ago, players in the United States have been able to cash out funds from their account. They're being processed as quickly as possible. It's hopeful that the first players will receive their funds on Friday, if not a few business days after that. And, some cash outs may take a day or two longer than normal, but, that's just because of the high volume. And, there's many different methods available depending on how much money people have, but for all account balances $1 and above, there is currently a cash out method available and functioning.
So, in other words, when you log on to PokerStars using the regular PokerStars software that you probably still have on your computer, and if you don't, you can download it again, the cashier button is now active again, and you can actually process the refund to your bank. Or explain to us how it works and who you're processing this money through. Is it coming from a bank on the Isle of Man, or did you work out something with the DOJ to allow an American bank to do it, or how is that working?
I can't discuss the details of who's processing it or what deals were worked out. I'm definitely not the right person to talk about legal or technical details like that.
Okay.
But I can tell you that the cash outs are processed through the PokerStars cashier. As normal, the process is slightly different, and players are required to cash out their entire balance all at once. That would include all of their funds in their account, as well as any tournament dollars or tournament tickets, which are converted at 100% of value, so players get all the value on their account that they had in there. So they cash all of the money out, and then based on the total value of the account of funds plus tournament tickets and T-dollars, there will be different payment methods available. For people from $1 to $100 in their account, it would be an e-check, which is a direct bank transfer. And for $100 to $1,000, they'd have that e-check option, and also a paper check via mail. Once you get from $1,000 to $10,000, players will be able to use the e-check or direct bank transfer, as well as a paper check by mail or FedEx. Players with the really large account balances over $10,000 can start to use bank wires, as well as the e-checks and the paper checks via FedEx. And anybody that has over $50,000 in their account will only be able to use bank wire. Anybody with $1 to $49,999 in their account is going to be able to use the e-check, that direct bank transfer, and that is the method that PokerStars highly recommends for all players.
Two quick questions. First of all, what happens with the FPPs that people have established in their account? And second of all, is the ability to transfer to other players available now?
there will not be the ability to transfer to other players for U.S. residents. It's not there now, and it's not expected for the future at all. And as far as the FPPs, you know, it's a really big deal for PokerStars to be able to offer these cash outs to players just 11 days after the news of the 15th, and with some players hopefully and expectedly receiving their funds just 14 days afterwards. It's taken a lot of effort. It's taken a lot of focus. It's been just hands down the number one priority for the company. Now that this is secure and it's functioning, the company can work to focus on other areas. And FPPs are pretty high up on the list, and discussions are ongoing with the U.S. government. PokerStars would like to be able to allow all U.S. residents to use their FPPs in the VIP store for all or most of the things that they've been able to purchase in the past, such as bonuses for cash or merchandise or even live events. And these discussions are ongoing, and we'll wait to see what agreement can be come to. I'm hopeful that there will be news available in the next few days.
Steve, what about players who had won entry into, I don't know if you guys were running WSOP main event satellites yet, or EPT or other tournaments worldwide, because you mentioned that tournament tickets would be converted into cash. What if a player wants to go and play an event that they've qualified for overseas and they are a U.S. resident?
The tournament tickets being converted to cash actually referred to online tournament tickets. Players who qualified for live events are still playing those live events. In fact, this has already happened since the 15th with players that went to EPT San Remo, right? And it will happen again soon with EPT Madrid. PokerStars hadn't run any World Series qualifiers yet, but does plan to for non-U.S. residents in the future, starting in the next couple of weeks. And then after our main scoop tournament series, a few more extras will be run. But it's unclear as to what the prize package will include, you know. There definitely won't be a big PokerStars party in Las Vegas like there has been in the past.
One other thing I can add to that, my understanding is that like the EPT Madrid that's going on right now, if a U.S. resident wants to go over to Madrid and play in that, they can withdraw funds from their account while in Madrid to specifically play in the tournaments. They cannot withdraw cash out of it or anything that way, but they can play in the EPT Madrid and some of the other events over there by using the funds that are already in their PokerStars account. So is it business as usual for PokerStars then, other than the U.S.?
It is, yeah. As odd as it may seem to folks in the U.S., obviously, who are in a different situation, and that's understood. It is a very serious situation, but and disappointing for many players, I know. But, 80% or so of PokerStars business is outside of the U.S., and it is business as usual. You know, the Sunday Million is still going on, a $1 million guarantee on Sundays for a $215 entry tournament for players who aren't U.S. residents, right?
Yep.
As well as the Scoop Tournament Series is coming up quite soon, and people are able to qualify for the World Series. You can even qualify for the PCA online right now for next January in the Bahamas. In addition, there's a deposit bonus going on for Scoop for non-U.S. residents, 50% up to $200. So, there's promotions, normal play, and, with 80% of the customer base there, PokerStars is still, by an incredibly large margin, the world's largest poker room.
Steve, we just got a question here tweeted to us on from one of our Twitter followers. He's thinking about going up to Canada and playing there, taking his laptop with him, playing for a weekend in Canada, and then coming back to the United States. Will PokerStars allow him to do that?
No, our rules right now are very clear. U.S. residents are not allowed to play for real money on PokerStars. So that means if you want to play on PokerStars, right, you've got to actually relocate as a U.S. resident to another country. And that doesn't just mean, giving an address or providing a document. It's expected that you've actually, moved your stuff and you and, presumably your family or plan to in the near future, and you go somewhere outside the country and set up shop. There's a lot of documents required to get us to change your address and to a different country, to play remotely. You have to provide a utility bill with a new address, a bank account with a new address, just some measure of identity to show who you are, that actually could just be a U.S. passport for identity, a phone number in the country, and the people that are currently U.S. residents who do relocate outside of the country, and there will be some small number that do this. It'll be, you know, rare, but it will happen. You know, there'll be a lot more scrutiny, you know, a lot more attention paid to whether they're actually outside of the country or not. There's definitely technical means to determine, you know, where people are when they're connecting to PokerStars, and PokerStars has a lot of experience in this area, of course, and we'll definitely be watching. You know, it's never a fun decision or a fun job for anyone at PokerStars to try to stop someone from playing on the site who's in the past been, you know, a good loyal customer, but that is the situation we find ourselves in, and PokerStars intends to very vigorously enforce these new rules.
This is not only to protect the company, but to protect the players, because, you know, the last thing we want to do is get everybody dragged into all of this by the Department of Justice. So if you do want to do it, you don't have to change your citizenship, but you do have to commit.
You've got to go and be there. I mean, even if you move over, if you move to Canada and you go back and visit your family in St. Louis or Las Vegas, you can't play while you're inside the country. It's very serious. It is what's best for individual poker players. It's what's best for PokerStars. It's what's best for poker players as a whole. And you know, this is a very important and serious rule. And the consequences for violating it can include permanent loss of playing privileges and/or loss of funds in your account. So it's not something to play around with.
All right. I know Dennis has another question, but I just, as a follow-up to that, you mentioned something about having to take all of your funds out there. Does that mean that somebody who was going to stay in the United States and wanted to play in Vegas during the 6 or 7 weeks of the World Series of Poker, let's say they wanted to withdraw some of their funds so that they have live cash action, but they want to hold off and perhaps have that option to move to Canada or Mexico or Europe or Australia or Latin America or other places where they can play on Stars, so they want to leave some of their money in their account so that they have that future option available. Can they do that?
I'm afraid everything must go. Everything must go. It's all got to go at once if they decide to take it out. I mean, the situation you're talking about, I'm sure, is very real for some players, but it's also, you know, fairly uncommon. I think most players are happy to have their money back into their account, right?
Yep.
And for such players, you know, they're always free to withdraw all the funds. And then if the situation or residency changes in the future, they're always welcome to redeposit.
Oh, there you go. Okay, go ahead, Dennis.
Well, for 2 years we've had this radio show, and for 2 years I've been talking about PokerStars, and for 2 years I've been promoting about this company and how it stands for the player and how it always does, and this just speaks volumes to me. I just want people to realize that what Steve was saying here, that the first thing the PokerStars did was try to take care of their players. The first thing they did was try and arrange some way so these players could get access to their money. This is an extremely ethical company that has been fighting and fighting and fighting to get this within the U.S., to make it regulated so everybody can have a safe environment to play and a level playing field. And they've been stymied by some by the Department of Justice, and they've run into problems with others. But the overall view of the company, the overall actions of the company speak volumes in my book, that all they want to do is what's best for the poker players and for us to have some fun and do what we're entitled to do. So sorry I got on my soapbox there, but this just really gripes me. I get a little passionate about it.
If you look worldwide, you know, PokerStars is licensed in the Isle of Man. It's a very highly respected regulatory agency. You know, PokerStars is licensed in France, in Italy, in Belgium now. You know, all by the governments there, and it's been the long time, you know, worldwide business plan of PokerStars to work with governments to pursue licensing and regulation in whatever markets it's possible. So you know, it is a company that has that plan for the long run. And as you look at legislation coming up in Germany next year, PokerStars supports that. We're not sure what's going to be there, but you know, licensing and regulation, you know, is something that PokerStars has been involved in around and is still involved in around the globe.
Steve, one more question from Twitter. Michelle88 asks, can I still play free rolls on PokerStars.net?
You can play for play money, but not for free rolls at this point in time.
So if there's a prize involved at the end, American players are not eligible?
That is currently the case right now, yes.
Okay.
Got one more thing. I guess you're up in Vancouver right now. What's the hard job that PokerStars has you doing tonight?
Oh, you're going to make me sound like a slacker now, Dennis. I am up in Vancouver, and tonight I'll be taking seven Supernova VIPs here in Vancouver, Canada, up to watch Game 7 against the Chicago Blackhawks. So going to take them to dinner first, going to go out and see the game, and talk to the players and, you know, hear what they think about the site, what we can improve, and hopefully show their appreciation for our high volume of play. Yeah, PokerStars has, you know, long been known as the as the company with the leading VIP program, and also we're very customer focused. So the more we can get out with and meet and talk to our players, the better we can understand their needs and meet them.
Well, Steve, we do have listeners all around the world who will continue to play on PokerStars, and we wish them all the best of luck. But the big news today is for domestic United States players. They can get their money back, and as Steve mentioned, just about the time we started the show today, PokerStars turned the cashier back on so that you can facilitate a transfer by e-check or otherwise into your bank accounts and get your funds back from that site that were frozen ever since Black Friday. That's great news, Steve, and we appreciate you coming on today to make that announcement. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Well,
have a great
Steve,
time
thanks
in the game
again. I know you've been swamped and everything like that, so thanks for taking the time out to do this. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys. That was very professionally done. You made it really easy. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Steve Day from PokerStars. Again, if you missed it, the big announcement is the cashier window is open, and if you've got money on there and you wanted to get it off, you can go to the PokerStars client right now and start doing that. Now, we've only got a few minutes left, but Dennis, you've actually got to run now because you've got a live cash tournament to play, right?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I'm going to have to sprint to the table right now, but this was just, I couldn't leave. I had to finish up the discussion.
Yep. So. All right, good luck on day two. Hope that short stack turns into something more substantial, and we'll report on all that and much more with you next week.
All right, take care, my friend.
All right, thank you. Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas for his half of the final table show today. Before I go, let me talk about some TV poker. First of all, ESPN has announced that they are going to carry the World Series of Poker again this year. They have not announced exactly which events will be televised, but of course there will be a lot of coverage of the main event, which last year I think took up 14 or 15 weeks in the fall. So that'll be back on, and I assume that means that Lon McCarron and Norman Chad still have jobs with ESPN. In fact, Andrew Feldman, who is a blogger and a podcaster for ESPN, said that there are not only going to be more broadcasts, but there will be new TV enhancements. I mention that because there's been a lot of question about what happens to all poker on TV now that they can't have PokerStars and Full Tilt Poker as their dominant advertisers. They were not the dominant advertisers on the WSOP broadcasts on ESPN, although they were there. They were not the lead advertisers as they were, for instance, with PokerStars on High Stakes Poker and Full Tilt on Poker After Dark. As far as High Stakes Poker goes, the Game Show Network had been airing new shows on Saturday and reruns on Saturday and then reruns on Sunday as well. Something like 13 hours of poker programming with a couple of World Poker Tour broadcasts thrown in there as well. GSN has now canceled all of the Sunday night poker reruns, but High Stakes Poker, which is about 7 or 8 weeks into its current season, is going to continue to air on Saturday nights, although it has changed the air time. It used to have its first broadcast at 7 o'clock Central Time. That will now be at 10 o'clock Central Time. That's just started this past weekend. And when the show returns this Saturday, they'll have a whole new lineup. As you know, the high-stakes poker seasons are broken up into thirds. They do 3 days of taping, one long session that becomes three or four shows, another long session that becomes three or four shows, and another long session that becomes three or four shows. And the new session will start this Saturday with Phil Locke, Antonio Esfandiari, Doyle Brunson, Phil Galfond, Johnny Chan, and two businessmen who were on there earlier, Bill Klein and Robert Croke, both of whom had no problem giving action to the rest of the table. So GSN still has High Stakes Poker, but at different times, and now only on Saturday nights. Now, another thing that we had talked about being on TV was our friend Pat Walsh from here in St. Louis, who won the 10K bounty shootout at the Bike just a couple of months ago, and he was on our show talking about it shortly afterwards. That now does not look like it's going to be televised on ESPN because it was part of the NAPT broadcast sponsored by PokerStars, and so ESPN has pulled that off the air. You also won't see Vanessa Selbst and Jason Mercier pulling off their double-doubles of back-to-back wins from last year's event and this year. The Big Game, another PokerStars show, is going to still be produced, but will not air in America. It will be online at PokerStars.tv and will air on TV networks around the rest of the world, but not in the U.S. So that's all we have for you this week. Back next week with another edition of The Final Table, Tuesday at 3, same time, same place, here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Thanks for listening and downloading our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.